both went through some dark times. I mean, for me, we got to one point, hat and locks, and I really needed a sleep. Not so much a sleep, but to just sit down and have a lie down and just rest everything and just reset my mind. It worked after, but coming into those locks, it was probably a big dark point.
I'll go through it completely different. Like, so Rich will keep talking, whereas I need to just really focus in. I kind of start taking everything in around me. So, like, I'll start focusing in on how the light's hitting the trees or how it's hitting the water, you know, just little things like that, just to take my mind completely away from what's actually going on.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast. I'm Craig Lewis, and this week we are breaking down what it takes to run an extreme endurance race. I'm joined by Ben Davis and Richard Wilcox, who recently completed the mammoth 145-mile Grand Union Canal race. The pair who finished the race in 42 hours and 22 minutes are taking part in the Canal Slam, a 420-mile three-race challenge that will see them complete another 145-miler at the Kennet and Avon Canal race and the mere 130-mile Leeds and Liverpool Canal race. I spoke to Ben and Richard about what it takes to prepare physically and mentally to take on such distances, about race nutrition, sleep deprivation, overcoming extreme tiredness, aches and pains, and about the feeling of crossing the finish line after it all. I started our chat by asking Ben exactly what the race they took part in at the end of May was.
It was the Grand Union Canal race, 145 miles, but this year the two of us are taking on what that company called the Canal Slam. So it's 245 mile races finishing with 130 mile race. The first two have got 8 weeks between them, and then the second and third have got 4 weeks between them to get ready for them. But yeah, that's that as far as the sort of challenge that we're going for. We're just a bit stupid enough to take it on.
And at the moment, it's part one of that has been ticked off, that original 145-mile race, which just to me sounds mind-blowing. But yeah, my first question was, how do you get yourself ready for a run like that, both physically and, I suppose, how do you get mentally prepared to believe that you can do something like that?
I think we're both different when it comes to our styles of running. So yeah, Rich can take this one.
Yeah, Ben loves the canal, and he loves these sorts of races, where mine, I like the mountains more. And obviously running in mountains, and it's totally different. So me personally, I've totally changed the way that I've trained for these, both mentally and physically. I just knew there'd be a different kind of toll on the body. So I thought, yeah, I think with mountain races, you've just got to be up there to train and get your body used to it and the terrain and the weather. And so it is quite straightforward, whereas with this, it's different. It's totally different. And so I just thought to myself, I've got to approach this differently. And so about 6 months ago, I just totally changed my training regimen. I just thought I need to strengthen all the ligaments in my legs. It's just totally flat. There is some, obviously, when you go up and down locks, you have a bit of respite, but the rest of it, it's just the same and same for hours on end. And I just thought, how can I combat the later in the race, that was the tiredness and also that you may get an injury through the, you know, through doing it for how many miles. So I started my foundations was gym work. So I'd hit the gym twice a week, doing upper body and legs. And I mean, hard. I mean, I'd done gym work before and just really messed about with it. But this time I listened to a few podcasts for strength training for what runners, and I can't remember which one it was, but one said to me, most runners just use lighter weights. And this runner said in the podcast, if you're not feeling it the next day after a leg day, then you're not training properly in the gym. And that just stuck with me. And so I pushed it really hard. And then obviously you got DOMS after the day after, and sometimes the day after that, and fitting in. So all my training fitted in those around those 2 days in the gym. And yeah, it paid off. I feel strong, and I think it's helped me in every bit of other running as well. I think once I've finished these, I don't think I'm going to change my training too much. And I think Ben was the same. Obviously, Ben can tell you, but I think without telling each other, I think we went sort of down the same sort of route.
Yeah, and I'm going to come to you on that in a second, Ben, because I've been watching your training a little bit through Twitter and so on. But Rich, I just wondered, you mentioned that you've done more mountain running than this kind of canal running. But have you taken on, because I know Ben has, have you taken on this kind of distance in the past? And if not, how did that feel mentally to go, my word, I've got this huge distance to do?
Well, I've been running under 3 years, and I think it comes with the mindset, to be fair. I started running and I decided to do a couch to 100 miles in a year. And I picked a mountain race as well. And that's how me and Ben met each other, to be fair, within that sort of first year. And so I think you just meet people who are just minded, and say, do you think this would be a good thing to do? And they're like, yeah, let's try this, let's try that. And so, the mindset, I think with some people, they have to work at it. And I think some people have just got it there. They just need to bring it out a bit more. It's not saying that you don't have to work at it, because I think every race is different. And if you approach it with a blasé attitude, then I think you're going to set yourself up to fail. I've not done 145 miles, and I've not completed 100 miles in over a year. So it was like jump straight in there, just believe in the training that I've done and believe in myself that I can get to the end. I think it was that sort of mindset. I think if you train good, then you're taking out that sort of doubts. If you've not put the training in, then you've got that extra added doubt, have I done enough? And so that can play, and you don't really want that going into something so big.
Yeah, definitely. No, I always love talking to you guys who do, and girls who do amazing distances. I'm always struck by the kind of the real positive attitude of, you know, most people go from couch to 5K, but you just thought, I'll go couch to 100 miles. But Ben, just turning to you, I know that this time you've done an awful lot more strength training, and you've really been focused on that. But that on the flip side, you kind of with a young child as well, you haven't maybe had enough time to do as much running as you might have liked.
No, I haven't. That was my biggest concern going into it. And I honestly thought that was going to be my biggest letdown. So I was like really quite stressed like going into this one, because last year I'd done so much running going into it, but no strength work. I've always neglected strength work and like gym work and stuff. So this year it kind of, the gym like lent itself to me in a way with the little one, because it's literally around the corner. If ever I get a call and I need to come home, I'm literally like 2 minutes away, rather than if I go for a run. Unless I run just laps around the block, I could be like half an hour or so away, or depending on where we are. So utilising that was brilliant, and I really do think it paid off in the end. And once we got running, all the stress of everything had gone. Everything just felt good. Just went into it feeling like a cold spring, really ready to run and actually have like put down some big miles. Because it's been a few. I said it's not been as long as Rich's, but it's been a good few months since I put down a really decent run. So I was quite looking forward to seeing how much the strength training and like the gym work would really like help in this kind of genre of running. And I think it did. I really do. I think it really did help, especially in the like the latter stages of it, when normally everything's starting to break down. I normally get some really bad issues with the front of, like, not my shins, but I think it's the anterior something, like the muscle down the side of the shin on the front. I always get bad problems there, which stops me walking in the later stages. So I end up having to like hobble, run. But this time, nothing, absolutely nothing. Like the legs were, so whatever I've been doing has been working. But we didn't mention it to each other at all, like what training we were doing or anything. And for a good few months, and then we just started talking like a few weeks ago before the Grand Union about our training and whatnot. And we were literally doing exactly the same things and like just training hard in the gym. And when the legs have had it in the gym, like the next day, go onto a body and stuff to just help the core and everything else that's going to be moving, especially for that distance.
I don't think strength training, which also I neglect terribly, can really be underplayed. I did a podcast with David Abbott last week, who does loads of amazing tips on Twitter, and he was talking about the real importance of weightlifting and how that's helped him to do sub 3 hour marathons, which is obviously it's kind of a different skill set in running, but it still requires those same things. And Michelle did the London Marathon this year, and she just didn't have time to do much running at all. Was doing lots of strength training and was a bit similar to you, was a bit worried about it all, but went out there and had one of her, wasn't setting any world records or anything, but just one of the easiest runs she's had on a marathon just because of this strength training. So yeah, I think it is, it's hugely important. But I guess the other thing, and maybe if I turn to you first, Rich, on a run like this, is how does it work in terms of nutrition and a support crew and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a funny one, these canal races, because you can either have a crew or use their checkpoints, whereas with every other race I've done, it's just been their checkpoints, and you can have a crew as well. But with this, it was I'll say a big thank you to the two lads, Dan and Chris, who came and crewed for us, because of that. Without them giving up their weekend, then we couldn't have actually have achieved this. And so it is a big thing. Nutrition-wise, I think it was a big one for me. It's constantly changing. And I can remember this time getting into the 110s and just being sick of the electrolytes that I was drinking and the food that I've been eating. And a lot of it is more sugary based, obviously. And I realised that I probably need to change my nutrition on rice, basically broaden what I'm eating. And that's quite a hard thing to do. But most of my nutrition is probably, it's like a 5-year-old's birthday party. it's all snacks and it's all high sugar, or it may be pastries and sausage, like cocktail sausages. Or I try to get all the main like macro nutrients obviously in there as well. But yeah, I think it opened my eyes to looking at different strategies on fueling, which I probably didn't have before. So it's like one of those hurdles now. I think the big thing that's come away from me is that nutrition, is that having a broad, sort of more broader palate, having fruit and having a really good varied sort of, I always think about the costs, because obviously there's a cost to it, and you can have a lot of wastage if you haven't eaten it. But I just think, I think that you do need to do it. I think it's one of those sacrifices, the same way as having enough there, that you don't get 110 miles in and stop eating because you've just had enough of what you've got. So yeah, Going forward, that's probably going to be one that I'm gonna look at, and the fluid side as well, because It was the first time I didn't use salt tablets. I just concentrated on electrolytes and obviously the ones that you drop into your drinks. And I'm probably more likely going to go back to squashing salt tablets. I think they're like deadening my sort of taste buds going into it. So it was a big thing to and probably go away and look at what other ultra runners use and what works for them. But I think it's so individual,
yeah.
Because our tastes are so individual as well. It can be what's good for somebody may not be good for me, and vice versa. So it's a lot of testing. And I think once you've been ultra running for a long time, you forget that side of it, because you just go to those tried and tested and not bother testing anything else out. So I think I haven't got much time to do it, but I think I'm probably just going to, on race days, probably just get some stuff that I never ate before and just go and try a couple of weeks before, or just bring some on race day. And now Ben, he pulled out some fruit, he pulled out some apples, and I was like, oh, I'll have an apple. And the apple was tasted so nice. And that's one thing that I do love about ultra running. You get that so far into it. Everything you eat, everything you taste, it's like the best thing you've ever tasted. So those apples that we deployed later on in the race were just like, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, and Ben, I was going to ask, Rich may have just given me the answers, but I was going to ask, were you eating the kind of same stuff, or were you looking at him going, oh my God, he's having more gummy bears and more sweets?
No, that's normally me. Like, I mean, Rich is normally like my main go-to crew man. So like, that's what made this, course, what is making this sort of race series quite special to the both of us. But yeah, I'm normally like packs and packs of sweets, biscuits, crisps every now and again, but it's mainly just jelly sweets and sugar for me, because sugar works really well, like I find for me. But this time, I think we got to about 130 odd miles and both of us were struggling with like acid reflux. Like it was like almost like we were on the verge of being sick, but without being sick. And it was just so much sugar that we'd been consuming throughout the day, with the heat as well, because it was exceptionally hot over the whole weekend. And like, there's not much respite on the canal. And it has this cruel way of, when you think you're in the shade for a while, you'll cross a bridge and you're on the other side of the canal and you're in the baking sun, just staring at the other side of the canal, looking at nice, beautiful shade. And that was just evil in its own way. But yeah, this time around got me thinking a lot more about my nutrition and going on, like working on the weather with it as well, and maybe going more fluid based with the different companies like Tailwind and those kind of drinks, depending on what the weather's like. I don't think I could go through like what we did last weekend again, because the pain in my throat after like 20 odd miles of just every time you like burp or anything like that, you've just got acid coming up in your throat. So it was excruciating at times. But yeah, that apple, I think it was at mile 135 or something like that. It was like the last, we had 10 miles to go, and it was just the nicest thing I've ever tasted in my life. I've completely forgot I had them in my box, and till we opened up the box, and I wasn't going to take anything, and I carried on walking, and Rich saw the apples, and I was like, yeah, bring me one. So yeah, that they were great. And bananas earlier on as well. We had like some chap, didn't we, on the canal? He was like just down drinking some cans of cider on the side of the canal, just started randomly talking to us about what we were doing. And we mentioned it to him, like, you know, what we were doing and that. And next minute he comes running up behind us with this like handful of bananas and that, just wanted to help us out. We were umming and ahhing, like, oh, you know, we're having a laugh and a joke. We're like, oh, I wonder what he's done to these bananas. And then we were just like, you know what, sod it. I really want to eat these. And they're just the best. I'm not a massive fan of bananas. Like, I have to really, really fancy them. But, oh, man, they were so nice. They really were. Don't even know who that guy was, but if you ever listen to this podcast, thank you so much.
How tempting by that stage was that, were the cans of cider as well?
Oh, well, I mean, both of us don't drink, but I think if they were, if I could see the condensation running down the outside of them, they would probably been, I'd have probably been fighting him for them.
Yeah, for sure. I've looked at your roots on Strava and so on, and you have the mileage breakdown and so on, and you guys obviously set off at a sort of nice jaunty 10-minute miles sort of thing, and obviously as it went on naturally the pace slowed down. But did you have a plan for how quick you were going to do it, and at what point you thought I'm going to start walking, or was it just I'm tired now, I need to walk?
I don't know about Ben, but I didn't really go in with a plan. I knew that I needed to be quite conservative at the start, try to conserve as much energy as I could. For me, there wasn't no plan as such, just to be conservative at the start and then see how we get on. And I think it worked pretty well. And I think there was going into it as well, as we got further on into the race, we had good little spurts as well. And I think one was initiated by Ben, and I think another one was initiated by me, where we did get a little bit faster. I don't think we could have planned it any better. I don't think. I think it's just one of them of just going out conservative and seeing what the body's like. Most of the time I think, yeah, I'm going to be conservative, and then I just fly out and then like bombing at mile 10 normally. And so, yeah, I think it was a good breakthrough for me to like, yeah, I can start up slow. I don't need to do like 6 minute miles and keep up with the front people. I can just let them go off and do my own thing and be conservative. So that was a big takeaway from me.
Yeah, and was there a bit at all where you sort of thought, oh, I've hit the wall now, or this is really painful, or oh my word, I'm going to struggle now? Or did you feel fairly as comfortable as you can do when taking on that kind of distance?
I think we both went through some
hat and locks. I'm just saying hat and locks. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I think we both went through some dark times. I mean, for me, we got to one point, hat and locks. And I really needed a sleep. I just really, not so much a sleep, but to just sit down and have a lie down and just rest everything and just reset my mind. It's not so much sleeping, it's just like I feel just needed a reset. And I think it worked. It worked after, but coming into those locks, yeah, it was probably a big dark point for me, and we all approach it differently. Like, I'm probably one of these ones who probably don't show it as much, so I'll be chatty all the way through a race and not show it, and so we're all differently. But yeah, I think we both had some, both went into some both dark places that you can only get yourself out, really. Even when you're running together, it's up to you to get yourself out of that and maintaining that sort of discipline to help yourself out, if that makes sense.
I'll go through it completely different. Like, so Rich will keep talking, whereas I need to just really focus in, and I kind of start taking everything in around me. So, like, I'll start focusing in on how the light's hitting the trees or how it's hitting the water, just little things like that, just to take my mind completely away from what's actually going on. And then like I'll struggle if someone tries to communicate with me in that kind of like time, because like I'll end up where I'm starting to get okay, and then I get pulled out of my little zone just after Hat and Lock. So we'd had sort of 20 minutes just like completely resting. And I ended up like leaving there with a bit of a niggle in my knee. So I was like kind of just kicking myself for stopping, but knew at the same time that there was a potential that if I hadn't stopped there, then me and Rich would have become separated. But we could have become that separated. We wouldn't have seen each other to the finish line. And that was just not, that wasn't what we set out to do. It was just every race is doing it together and finishing it together and going through the highs and lows of it together. So if Rich was resting, like I was resting as well. But then as we came out of Hatton Locks, I think I was a little bit in front of Rich at the time. I'd left a few minutes earlier, and then Rich come like running up behind me, and I was like just going through this little low patch of like kicking myself for stopping, and like that was the reason why my knee was hurting. And it wasn't, my knee was just hurting because we'd done like 120 odd 25 miles or something by that point. But like everything goes through your head and you're just kicking yourself for everything. But then Rich came up with this little like plan of picking a spot, like run to it. Like we'd pick a bridge, run to the bridge, and then pick a next spot and you'd walk to that spot, and then, and just, so we were literally run walking, and it just took my mind completely out of what was going on and just gave us something to focus on and to aim at. And like with probably within about half an hour, we were back chatting, having a laugh, just taking the piss out of each other and just having a good time again. And it really sort of changed the mood, which I really do think helped get us like straight through to the end.
Rich, the other thing that I wanted to mention was that obviously this event, you know, you didn't do it in 6 or 7 hours, of course. How long did it actually take, and what was it like sleep-wise? Because you must have suffered from sleep deprivation as well.
It took us 42 hours to complete it. And obviously, I had not done that distance before. But yeah, sleep deprivation, it hits people in different ways. I mean, there was a couple who passed us in the latter stages. I think they're probably in their 20s, and it was like as if they'd just started a park run sort of thing. And I was just like, gosh, I've done nearly 41 hours, and I'm absolutely like cream crackered. And this young couple come running past like as if they're on a park run. And so for me, it's just like, yeah, I think your age, obviously, it all comes into it. I'd started to hallucinate a little bit as just going into Birmingham. I thought I was seeing people like young lads with caps on standing by the side of the canal. And when I got a bit closer to them, it was just trees. And I thought, well, I'm not going to. I thought, I've been there before in races, what I've done before, where I've hallucinated. And so I know what's going on. But yeah, so I didn't really, I think one time I said, is there somebody there, Ben? And he was like, no, there's nobody there. But all the way through going to the end, I was seeing people. I just knew what was happening, so I didn't really say anything to Ben. But yeah, it is something that you have to manage. Like I had that rest at Hatton Locks. So I don't know how far it was into the race, but I do recommend people, if they can have 5 or 10 minutes just to reset. It might not be so much but it's just that mind. I think that mind just needs a rest from everything that you're doing. Just to reset and feel fresh again. And it does work. It's surprising how just those few minutes of just not thinking of anything or just relaxing, how it can invigorate your mind again. But yeah, if you're going to do those sorts of miles and hours on your feet, then be prepared to manage how you feel and what you see. Yeah. I think that it's good having people with you, but there might come a time in a race where you're on your own. So it's managing your fatigue in a way that's going to get you to the end.
Yeah, and just very quickly, guys, because we're rapidly running out of time, unfortunately, just sort of maybe a minute each on how you felt as you finally completed that 145 miles and finished that sort of grueling achievement.
I think it was a massive relief, like having, because obviously going into the Canal Slam, that was the first race is always going to be the big, like the setup for the next two. Because if we failed at that, you know, if we didn't finish that one, then obviously going in, we're still paid up for the next two. So it's like we'd still go and do them just to get those courses done. But yeah, having completed that, it was a massive relief, like allowing us to set up ready for the next one. So ready for round two then.
Rich?
I spent probably 20 hours of the race saying to Ben, when I finish, I'm picture taken in the car and I'm sleeping and that's it. I'm so tired now. That's it. And when I finish now, I was like, I think I spent so much time thinking, right, just get the first one out the way. Once you get the first one out the way, and then we can concentrate, it's coming alive. But I was so tired going over that line. I think my memory laugh, I said to Ben, I bet him off from the end, are we going to run at the end? And he just went, no, I'm done. And I laughed, and we both laughed, and we did. We just walked across that line. It was just, but I just knew that, like, inside, I was like, yes, we've done it. We've done it. Because like Ben said, it set us up for the next two. And for me, it was a big thing. One, yeah, I can do 145, 148 miles, whichever it was at the end. And so, yeah, it was a big one. Even though everybody else around me was just like, I was just tired and done, to be fair.
Well, it's a fantastic achievement. Well done to you both. And thank you very, so much for talking us all through how you approach a race like that and how you get through it. And good luck with the next two to come. And thank you for joining me on Running Tales today.
Brilliant.
Cheers. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Ben and Richard for joining me on Running Tales this week. If you enjoyed what they had to say, if you enjoyed this week's podcast, then I just wanted to take a moment to ask you all our wonderful listeners, to take a little bit of time out to give us a review and a rating wherever you listen to us on Running Tales. These positive reviews mean that the podcast gets seen by a wider audience. So the more we get, then the more people get to listen to the inspiring stories of our guests. Also, if you want to see and hear more of our content, please be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Running Tales Pod, on Facebook, where our page is called Running Tales, or to check out our YouTube channel at Running Tales Pod. You can also subscribe to our newsletter by visiting runningtales.substack.com. where you'll find written versions of all of these podcasts, as well as articles on all kinds of subjects from the world of running. Thanks as ever for all your support, and I'll see you next week for another Running Tales podcast.